But all of that is in the future. Right now, it's time to look back to the past with History Matters. Taking a look back at this week in history, as always, joined by the great Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire. How are you?
Thank you, Aaron. You know what I'm thinking? Well, in 20 years, that this will be history. Well,
right,
actually,
right.
After the show airs.
Yeah, yeah.
People
immediate
can hear it again.
History.
That's
yeah.
Right, exactly.
Instant
so.
Classic, I That's think they right. call it on ESPN. So this week in history, what do we got? I mean, we've got to recognize the most significant thing yesterday is the anniversary of D-Day.
Yes.
So
yeah, and that's
starters.
Pretty important, 1944, mm-hmm. and everything hinged on that. The idea of having an amphibious invasion, the largest in history at that point, this armada that sets out, and of course, there are people, the Germans are tricked into thinking they're going to Calais, on the French coast, and no. In fact, Patton is brought in, General Patton, to England to head this dummy force that makes the Germans think, oh, that's where it's going to be, and especially Hitler. And so Normandy is not as well fortified, though there are some drops that go awry, but you can't help watching Saving Private Ryan to get a good idea of just what a horrific kind of assault, and the willingness to sacrifice so many men in order to get a beachhead, because they knew this is the way to get into Europe.
Yep. And to mention the people who actually did go to Calais, like there
oh,
was
yeah.
an actual dummy force that
oh, yes.
went
to right. the parachute drops
as the decoy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But it just shows that in an age in which we do have differences of opinion, sometimes. Mm-hmm. You have to stand up and resist evil
yep.
in the world. And
yep.
Unfortunately, that does take sometimes a commitment militarily. And in those days, in those times, when there is broad agreement that the forces of totalitarianism had to be stopped,
yep.
then brave men fought to make sure that we could be free today to talk on the radio.
Yep, absolutely.
Which is a great thing. Yeah, yep. It is a really important thing.
So that was yesterday in history.
Yes, but
we've
now
got a
this
whole bunch of other things that happened this week in history.
I would say
as well.
On a slightly lighter note, but interesting, and that also happens in this, we find these interesting kind of coincidences. Another crossing of an ocean body takes place, but it's in 1896. Two fellows, George Samuelson and Frank Harbow, leave New York in an 18-foot rowboat headed across the Atlantic, and they arrive in England on August 1st in a rowboat.
That's impressive, but why?
Somehow I don't think that was in the planning of D-Day. Like, remember that 1896.
Remember Samuelson and Harbo.
Yeah.
Why an 18-foot rowboat? Why not a 20-foot rowboat?
Just
give yourself that little bit more luxury. It's equally impressive.
You stay on that end.
Right.
I need some alone time.
This line demarcates your side
That's
and my
right.
side.
Well, there's a couple of interesting ones on June 5th. In fact, the same year, 1994, two remarkable things happen with kids, and that is the youngest female pilot to cross the Atlantic, 12-year-old Vicky Van Meter, takes off from Maine following Amelia Earhart's historic route, and she arrives in Scotland 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And then the same year, same day, a 10-year-old Michael Kearney receives his bachelor's degree in anthropology from the University of South Alabama, becoming the youngest college graduate, at least at that point.
That's good, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
I mean, what's he doing
that's obscure,
now, though?
That's obscure history. It is.
We got 12 years on everyone. He's, what, 34 years old now?
I
he's
know,
gotta
should,
be. I hope he's doing
now?
Something,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah. Exactly.
So the 12-year-old girl, Vicky Van Meter,
yes.
who flies across the Atlantic, she leaves on June 5th. She arrives 2 days later, but this happened in 1994. What
right.
plane did she take that in 1994 took 2 days to get across the Atlantic?
That's a really good question, and it kind of makes
Was it
you
like
wonder,
also an Amelia Earhart-style plane?
Well,
was
and
that
I,
the...
what, this is the part I don't know, and I don't think she did it alone. I think maybe she was at the controls,
maybe.
But there was probably another adult. I don't know about that one. These are the things we like to chase down. But also on this day, June 5th, 1956 is something that's really monumental. It's when bus segregation was ruled unconstitutional because on the basis of it violating the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
Yep.
And that starts bus boycotts, Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat. I mean, this is important stuff in history.
And also a really good look. We were having this conversation a couple of days ago with regard to the cake shop case that came down from the Supreme Court on Monday, and we were talking about how the Supreme Court, without actually getting into the politics of the decision, we were talking about the way that the Supreme Court makes decisions. They have a tendency to try to actually, as much as we talk about it politically, Supreme Court has a tendency to try to avoid making big sweeping rulings as much as possible. They try to narrow their focus 99% of the time. This is actually a really good example of that, because 54 is when Brown versus Board of Education gets handed down, striking down segregation, but only for K through 12 public schools. You still have to have more decisions like this one in 1956 on public transportation. It's actually not until 1963, I think it's Johnson v. Virginia, if I'm remembering off the top of my head, a ruling 9 years after Brown, where the Supreme Court finally, after all of these rulings, finally says, okay, segregation, period, is unconstitutional. Yeah. But that didn't happen with Brown versus Board of Education.
And
it didn't happen with this.
You still had to have a Civil Rights Voting Act.
You still
after
have
that.
And after Which that, is, yeah, yes, because the, exactly. the rulings were not being implemented.
No.
Yeah.
So and yet how important it is when I hear this and, it, you know, calling on the 14th Amendment, when I hear this kind of let's go back to the Constitution the way it's written, I go, well, how Amish do you want to get?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you want to start? If you want to say let's go back to the Founders Day, then are we avoiding the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, mm-hmm. the 19th Amendment? And that comes up this week anyways, the 19th Amendment on June 4th, 1919. Is when the U.S. Congress approves the 19th Amendment to the U.S. States Constitution. And for those of you who are wondering which one that is, that's the one that guarantees women the right to vote.
Yep.
And I think we consider that pretty important today.
Yep, nationally, after a number of states had done it.
Yeah.
I think starting in the 1870s, I think.
Right.
Individual states were doing it, but it wasn't until less than 100 years ago
The suffragette movement was huge, and so many people participated in it.
Yep.
So those things, they really do matter, and people speaking up, and it's sometimes the force of an individual who says, no, this isn't right, and that makes a huge difference.
Speaking with Scott Washington, so what else?
Okay, well, here's one. June 8th, we're going to go kind of back in time, 1789. It's when James Madison gets on the floor of Congress, he's in the House of Representatives, and makes a case for there being additional amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Now, the Constitution that had been approved and ratified, half the states ratified it as is, the vanilla version, legislative, judicial, executive branch, but nothing else. And half the states had proposed amendments. And of course, as we know, North Carolina becomes the only one of the 13 that actually voted to postpone ratifying the Constitution until provisions were made for adding a Bill of Rights to, or introducing a Bill of Rights to Congress in the ratifying states.
Yeah.
So here they are, and, you know, by this spring, here a year later, they realize they've got to do something, and James Madison begins this systematic approach. Now, by this point, they're you're trying to establish this new government under this new Constitution, and some people are just saying, no, we don't have time for this. And he makes the strong case, the smoking gun, saying, we've got two states out of the Union, and if we do this, it will help bring them back in, meaning Rhode Island, which had voted it down. Eventually, they, of course, ratify it, but more importantly, North Carolina. So it's incredibly important. It's Roger Sherman of Connecticut, though, over the course of this summer, that says, no, we've been through everything, all the right from the very beginning of Congress through the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, who says, no, we're not going to monkey around with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put amendments on afterwards. And that's why we have the amendments on afterwards. But how important they are, and here we are looking at the 19th Amendment and also a ruling about segregation that was declared on the 14th Amendment. We wouldn't have had that if we didn't have that flexibility built in to the Constitution.
So I happen to be reading a biography of James Madison
right
now.
Wonderful. He has
thank
the book
you to
in
the
hand.
UNC Library for this. I've got six others where that came from. I raided the Madison section the other day. But this book that I literally just was reading earlier today makes the really interesting argument about the Bill of Rights and about Madison with the Bill of Rights, that when he was thinking about them and proposing them. The idea, his idea, wasn't necessarily that this was going to be a check on government doing things that violate people's rights, because ultimately, if you've got a big enough majority of the American people, and we see this with civil rights, we see this with the violation of civil rights and the establishment of Jim Crow laws. If you've got a big enough majority to go along with it, the government will run roughshod over people's rights, and there's not a whole lot that you can do about that in a democratic society, unfortunately. But what Madison was thinking was, okay, we put the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, and then assuming we can get the American people to care about the Constitution and revere the Constitution, and then there's the Bill of Rights in it, that will at least get them to think twice before they start violating the rights of unpopular groups. They start passing these laws, and then they look at the Constitution and think, oh, wait, the freedom of speech is actually an important thing. The freedom of religious expression is an important thing. We should be thinking twice before we take this step.
Well, and even that idea of using the rights as a check and balance, that only becomes in play because at first they're kind of like common values. These are the understood things. But as that generation passes, the next one picks up. Again, there begins to be this separation. And I think certainly with the Civil War, we begin to really see how important it is these values are as basic rights inherent to anyone, part of the DNA of America. So I know anybody who's listening worldwide wondering about America and saying, oh, yeah, this is an easy country to take over. I'm saying, oh, no, you don't understand the DNA of Americans. Mm-hmm. This is part and parcel because these rights really represent the deepest yearnings of the human spirit. And we've codified them in a set of eloquent wordings and phrases, but they speak to deeper issues that humankind has fought for and struggled for across the globe in many languages, many cultures, many times.
Yep, absolutely.
There's my speech.
Well said. Very well said.
Let's get some applause.
I wish I had like the America the Beautiful to play like very slowly in the background.
Yes, we'd have to see who has the lyrics they can sing along.
I was running down the list of patriotic songs here. Like, what's not controversial anymore?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Let's see. There's a couple of other ones that are interesting. And that is the Rolling Stones made their TV debut on the BBC program Thank Your Lucky Stars in 1963 on June 7th. And 30 years later, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame had their official groundbreaking ceremonies held in Cleveland.
Awesome.
I don't know if there's a relationship to that, but it's one of those kind
I'm sure Mick Jagger thinks so.
Yeah.
Have you been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I have not.
That's
a
fun place.
Yeah, is it? Yeah.
I was extremely ill the day that I was there, but it was still a fun experience.
And you know what? You will remember that always because you're being ill.
Because of my being ill.
I remember being in, seeing the Mesa Pueblo dwellings, and I was sick as ever, and I remember it to this day. Had a temperature of 101. It was like, I still remember it perfectly.
It was great. They were talking about purple haze, and I understood because that was how I was seeing the museum through these like hazy eyes stumbling around the place. I probably fit right in.
Well,
so, yeah.
Now, here's another thing. We've had volcanoes in the news in Guatemala and Hawaii, and our thoughts go out to all those people affected by it. But there's one that happened in 1783, June 8th, when a volcano eruption happened in southern Iceland, spewing 2.8 cubic miles of lava, ultimately causing a famine and 9,500 deaths.
Is that the one that also caused, like, significant climate shifts
across huge swaths
of the world for many years?
I've
read about, like, the French Revolution as being kind of somewhat triggered by the fact that the crops were bad for several years in a row because we had this ash hanging in the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had not realized
Don't quote me on that. I feel like I read that somewhere.
That sounds wonderful. Well, maybe not to the people of the time.
But
here's another thing that happened on June 4th, 1989, Tiananmen Square. Mm-hmm. And that's when the People's Army clashed with the Chinese pro-democracy demonstrators. And it also marks Memorial Day for that to remember, too. But we all remember that image, iconic image of the lone person standing in front of a tank.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks so eloquently of how people do speak up for those. And sometimes that's a long progress, and it takes a long time, but it still goes on.
Well, that's kind of coming full circle back around, because we start by talking about D-Day, speaking to people who stand up and risk their lives against
a
totalitarian, authoritarian regime, and here we have Tiananmen Square, where people did the same thing.
It's interesting how these themes happen in a week. You know, we see, oh, well, what's happened this week? And we start seeing, isn't this interesting? Themes develop that seem to make sense.
Yep.
Here's one that is just because it's so helpful. 1943, the first ballpoint pen is patented by Hungarian Laszlo Biro. I don't know why they didn't call it the Biro pen instead of
Didn't they? Like, there's the company. Isn't there a Biro company?
I think there is. Maybe that's out of respect for him, but that's something that you think, oh, well,
either that or it's a huge coincidence.
People are still, you know, I guess, using the kind of pens
like
with
the
inkwells. That's just
ink all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where, like, I've got two ballpoint pens in my hand right now because we just accumulate them here in the studio, but they're so important.
They are. That's right. And I'm so glad you really lifted up reading a book and ballpoint
pens.
There you go.
I
mean, it's reassuring to anyone out there.
It's really interesting because you think about, and I think the Historical Museum up in Hillsboro is doing the typewriter exhibit that's going on all summer about just the transition between handwriting to the typewriter, to the word processor, to the computer, and how that transformed writing. I think prior to the invention of the typewriter, you had people just doing everything in longhand, but they were doing it in longhand with these old, like, at the time, new-timey inkwell pens.
Well, Gutenberg.
The ballpoint pen that doesn't that allows people to write more easily with a pen doesn't come along until well after the typewriter was invented.
Well, look what Gutenberg did, too, by establishing the printing press. Even in Hillsboro, there was a fellow, Robert Ferguson, who was the printer during that 1788 convention time, who becomes the official, makes the broadsides, declaring the vote.
Oh,
It's great stuff. Tom Hanks loves manual typewriters because it turns out that everybody types slightly differently, so the indentations are slightly unique, and they're personal. So that's one of the reasons why he likes to type notes.
All right. He would.
Yeah, that's right. he could afford to. Let's see. I've got enough time. Where's that J?
All right. We got time for one more. What do we got?
All right. There's so many good things.
Of all these possible ones.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at...
I should mention on the air that we're going through like 20 pages worth of this week's in history.
Well, here's one that has a local connection. June 9th, 1978 is when a fellow incorporates a company called Big Briar. It's a musical instrument company in Asheville. His name is Robert Moog. And we were talking a little bit about this last week. And, of course, he's an engineer who invents the Moog synthesizer. Now we have the Moog Festival. But that happens here. That really does have a North Carolina connection. And he did sell the company at one point, becomes an engineer for them, and then buys it back. And it continues today. But
Steve Jobs of music.
That's
then,
right,
in that
exactly.
Sense, right? Yeah.
And you know, you think of how much of our music today we get downloaded from sites, we play on YouTube, and yet how important. Music is to our lives, however it comes in whatever format. And that's part of history, too.
There you go. History matters. As always, Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.